This is the Concealed Carry Podcast, episode number 90. Welcome to the Concealed Carry Podcast, part of the ConcealedCarry.com network, and I am your host, Riley Bowman.
Riley's the man who has now finally returned after spending 24 of the last 30 days on the road and driven nearly 7,000 miles during that span. It's a lot of miles, bro.
Yes.
I'm Jacob Paulson.
And Jacob is the guy whose truck radio has never been turned on. Which, I'll tell you, I would not have survived 7,000. In reality, I've driven more than that during that time span, but I'm only counting the miles that was from here to Alabama and back, here to Las Vegas and back, and then I had two trips in that span to Idaho and back. So I would not have survived if I did not have a radio to listen to.
Yeah, no radio in my truck.
Of course, I was listening to a little bit of some podcasts and some audiobooks, but I got to have a radio. So anyway, I'm so happy to be back. And folks, just real quick before I forget, we apologize. This episode is coming to you exactly one day late. My apologies. We've been crazy busy, haven't we, Jacob? And yesterday we had some plans to get the podcast still produced, but those plans unfortunately fell through due to some delays with some people getting to where they needed to be. So
yeah, us included. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So anyway, today's topic, by the way, is the SHOT Show 2017 edition. It's our wrap up of the SHOT Show, which we just returned from. Really, still just it seems like a few days ago. And had an awesome show. And we covered some things last week while we were at the show, but there were still some really great products that we saw after that point that we wanted to give you all the details on. So we'll cover that today. And first, though, before we get any further, this day in history, since we haven't had the opportunity to do that in a little while, 1938, the so-called Mad Butcher terrorizes Cleveland. I don't think I even knew about this story, Jacob. Oh, I think I quoted that wrong. I said 1938. It's actually 1936. Excuse me.
I've never heard of this.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? And it's kind of fascinating, actually. I think stories like this, I mean, even though it is gruesome and it's terrible and yeah, you know, you get what I mean. I mean, we're talking about a serial killer here, but it's interesting, and here's why. After they had a number of bodies turn up headless and very precisely dismembered. Like some people thought it might have been done by a doctor or somebody with really good understanding of human anatomy. The thing that's fascinating to me, though, is that all this happened. Multiple victims, tons and tons of investigation being done by police, and the Mad Butcher's attacks suddenly stopped in Cleveland after Dolezal's suicide. Now, Dolezal, who was that? It was Frank Dolezal, who was an actual butcher and was a suspect, and he was interrogated for 40 straight hours, and he confessed to killing one of these victims. However, I don't think anything was actually totally resolved, and nobody had totally figured it all out. So he eventually kills himself, commits suicide, and the attack stopped. And to this day, the true identity of the Mad Butcher remains a mystery. And that's what I think is so fascinating. And then this is not the only story like this, right? There's tons of serial killer stories where it's like, you know, these people died and then it stopped and nobody knows. You know, just, wow. I don't know. Kind of interesting. And I think of it, too, in terms of Jacob, like some of these victims, you know, if they had been better trained and had the means to defend themselves, hopefully they wouldn't have been victims.
You know? Yeah, fair point.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's why I brought it up into today's episode today. Now, in 1863, this is right up your alley, Jacob, General Joseph Hooker takes over the Army of the Potomac.
Yeah, you know, it was amazing how much talent the Confederate Army had in their leadership. But unfortunately, they all kind of came to nasty ends. And now, that said, on the flip side, on the Union side, We had a lot of great talent as well, but none of them really seemed to get the job done until our friend Grant came in. But Hooker was a great general, and I actually first learned a lot about him when we thought about buying a house on Hooker Court. And my wife was very concerned about having that address, and I was like, I think it's named after someone.
Well, that's a really great point, because here's one of the fascinating things about General Hooker. I think he was a pretty talented commander to some extent. He certainly wasn't, you know, at the level of General Grant, or I would even say General Meade. You said nobody could really get the job done until General Grant. General Meade, actually, I mean, remember, this is the guy that won the Battle of Gettysburg, and there was some phenomenal strategizing that took place at the Battle of Gettysburg.
Granted, but the losses were pretty ugly.
That's true, too. And really, General Meade became kind of General Grant's, you know, number two guy. They spent a lot of the rest of the Civil War side by side working together. But General Hooker had quite the reputation for partying, drinking, and womanizing.
Yes.
And I guess I've never looked into it that far, but the term hooker, did it have some relation to this man's womanizing? I don't know. I had that thought.
I honestly don't know either. Yeah.
Perhaps one of our listeners can tell us. So there you go. But anyway, not that I really care that much, but General Hooker replaced, General Burnside. Burnside, you know, at this point, the Union was really losing the war. Just about every major battle they had been going into in recent months up to this point, they were losing. And so General Burnside, you know, is asked to step down. President Lincoln hopes that Hooker is the man. Hooker is put in place to take over the Army of the Potomac. And he suffers a major defeat at the Battle of Chancellorsville in Virginia. So then, I think it was on June 28th when Hooker turns over the reins to General Meade, and it's less than a week later that Gettysburg occurs. So to me, that's one very fascinating turn of events there, because we have these major defeats, defeat, 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 and then it gets handed over to General Meade. General Meade really pulls one out of his hat and just, you know, kills it, excuse the term, but, you know, he really nails it at the Battle of Gettysburg, and that was a major turning point in the war, because from that point forward, the Union started to really gain a lot of steam. Mm-hmm. So, fascinating time in history, I think, and I know you think that as well.
Yeah.
Now, in 2005, just kind of anecdotally, this was the day that President Bush, President George W. Bush, appointed Condoleezza Rice as Secretary of State, which made her, up to that point, the highest-ranking African-American woman to ever serve in a presidential cabinet. And so there you go. That's this day in history. So, Jacob, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. And without further ado, let's get into it, our SHOT Show 2017 wrap-up.
SHOT Show. I'm so excited. I'm still recovering from SHOT Show.
I know. I'm a little bit brain dead. I mean, you know, okay, so here's the story a little bit. And I talked a little bit about it, I think, on Monday, because I was still in Idaho and recorded the podcast while I was there. I had to travel home for a funeral. And I get there and I'm seeing all this family and friends. And we had a few get-togethers. And I normally really enjoy that. And I'm hey, how you doing, buddy? How you doing, cousin? How you doing, brother? And I didn't want to talk to anybody. Yeah. And I realized we had just talked to a couple thousand people at SHOT Show. Yeah, so emotionally and psychologically and socially, I was just drained.
Yeah, and physically too.
Yeah.
Some high-level impressions from Jacob about SHOT Show. Things that I had noticed that I felt like were different this year about the industry. One of the biggest things that I seemed to pick up on was, I think there's a greater movement away from, and I got to be careful how I say this. I think self-defense, firearm-related self-defense, is becoming a greater part of the industry than it was before. It almost to me seemed like hunting and outdoors and sports and competitive shooting were kind of the major players in the firearm industry. And self-defense has over time been kind of becoming a bigger, more topical point. And I think that I saw that a lot more at SHOT Show this year than in years past. That's everything. That's not just products that are being released, what we're hearing from executives, the kinds of celebrities that show up, the tone of organizations like the National Shooting NSFF and NRA. All those things combined just kind of made me, one of my biggest impressions I took from SHOT Show was the self-defense community is becoming a bigger part of the firearm community.
Absolutely. I mean, that has been a trend moving upwards for some time now. And yeah, you're definitely starting to see a lot more of that. Here was my kind of high-level impression of the show as a whole, was the tone of the show. It was very much like there was a lot of buzz. There was a lot of excitement. There was a lot of, I guess one big word to describe it would be optimism. We just changed hands. And actually, I was actually driving through Utah at that point, but while the show was still going on and you were still there, we had a new president inaugurated. And, love Trump, hate Trump, doesn't matter. There is a lot of optimism surrounding this changing of the guard from President Obama to President Trump. And the fact that it's not Hillary Clinton that is taking over the reins, there was a lot of optimism. And that was really fun and refreshing to see. Unlike years past, where there's always still like this, we have this really cool product, but, we're worried about, XYZ legislation getting passed or President Obama passing, this executive order that, suddenly this really cool product might not even, be legal anymore and crap like that. Mm-hmm. And so I always felt like there was like this cloud hanging over the industry. And now for the first time in almost a decade, it was like a breath of fresh air, like, oh. And I mean, here's one thing that we've seen a ton of expansion on, and that is suppressors. Like everybody,
I was going to bring that up too.
Everybody is making suppressors now. Everybody,
they were everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And you can just sense that, like, that part of that of the industry is like on this precipice. Like, we're just waiting for the word to come, and like, it's just going to blow up, and everybody is poised and ready for that. And so we know we've got the Hearing Protection Act being talked about, and I do believe President Trump would sign it. And President Trump has been giving some really positive vibes about his view on the Second Amendment, and it's all looking very bright for the industry.
Yeah, talking more about suppressors, just something that might be interesting to mention is, talk about the interactions we had with our friends from Europe. It was really interesting, and I kind of knew this already, but I guess I never really talked to somebody, but like, we were talking to two guys from England, I think, the UK, and we were kind of talking about suppressors a little bit, and these guys were like, we were kind of talking about all the cool things we have that they don't. We're like, oh, but we have, they're like, yeah, that's so cool. You guys have like handguns and big magazines and big rifle, they had all kind of stuff they were kind of talking about. And then it kind of, all of a sudden, like, the conversation flipped when suppressors came up, and they're like, oh yeah, you guys still have that problem with the NFA? That's weird, because like, for us, like, you buy it with the gun. Like,
yeah.
Everyone has one. Like, why would you have a rifle and not have a suppressor on it? That's stupid.
Yeah. I think it was, I actually brought that up with them, because I'm somewhat familiar with the fact that suppressors are not that big a deal in many other places of the world. And so I asked them about that. And yeah, so we had that conversation, and it's so interesting to me. I mean, like, I remember reading an article, and I don't remember which publication it was, years and years and years ago, where it talked about suppressors in Europe, and specifically in the UK, and how there was actually, I believe, if I remember this from the article correctly, I believe there's actually areas or towns or whatever they call them. I know the word, but I can't think of it right now. But communities in the UK where I believe they had like laws or ordinances that strongly encouraged the use of suppressors, or even required it, because it was considered to be being a good neighbor. I'm going to go out, you know, on this 200 acres of this beautiful countryside here and go hunting, and it's being a good neighbor, you know, the fact that I am using a suppressor so that it's not, you know, loud reports of my rifle going off instead of pew, 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 you know? And yeah, so true. And it's about time that we do something about suppressors in regards to the NFA.
Yeah, and so yeah, a lot of excitement around that, a lot of new players in that space. And you know, I think one guy said something to the effect of, yeah, we're just kind of waiting, like, like they know they're not really selling anything right now, but they hope they will.
Yep. Yeah, that was exactly the feeling I got. You know, whether you're talking to Silencer Co. or, I mean, even like SIG or Ruger, you know, that are now making suppressors, I got this feeling that, like, well, Silencer Co. talked about how they're ready. They're getting ready to really ramp up their production. And so, mm-hmm. you know, expanding their facility and so forth. So, a lot of optimism there, and especially in that arena of the industry, and it's really cool and fun to see. So, any other impressions that you had, just general impressions, Jacob?
Yeah. A thing that I'd like to always tell people, when people ask me about SHOT Show and they're so jealous I didn't get to go, kind of thing, one of the things I'd like to tell people about SHOT Show is how wonderful our people are. Like, it's so nice to be part of a tribe where, for the greater part, it's just a bunch of great people. You know, whether you're talking to a top-notch, famous, you know, competitive shooter, or you're talking to the chief product developer manager for Sig Sauer, or, I mean, it's just the people in this industry are great people, and they're nice, and they're courteous, and they care, and they're really committed to helping, you know, the shooting sports and the consumer be better, and the products be better. And so, you know, then there's always a few exceptions, a couple of jerks or people with too much ego. But I just, you know, I would just reiterate and tell people who don't get the opportunity to attend things like SHOT Show that this is a great tribe. This, you know, it's just great people.
Absolutely. It's a family. Because even though there are many of us that come from different walks of life, we do have this central common theme, and that is, you know, guns that connect us, and that it is something, and it is an industry that is often, and let's not forget, it is still under attack. Trust me, there are people working underground, even right at this moment, doing everything they can to undermine the Second Amendment. And, you know, but that having that little connection, and kind of being tried by fire in a lot of ways as an industry, brings us together. And that's a really cool thing to see as well.
Those are really the two major impressions that I had. You know, that the overall firearm industry is more and more so focused on self-defense. The firearm is a tool to save lives. And two, that, you know, there's just a really lot of great people in this industry. I was just really grateful for the vast majority of the people we talked to, that we shook hands with, that we exchanged business cards with. It was really interesting to see people from top brands, top, you know, games players in this industry asking us for input and feedback and really wanting to improve their products. It was just really cool.
Yeah. It was indeed. So, question. What was, you can pick one, or maybe you have several, but what was a random product that you saw that you're just like, whoa, it just kind of caught you off guard and blew you away?
Yeah, Falcon 37. What was the name of his products? Like Hubu or Habu or something?
Habu Mod 1, I think.
Habu Mod 1.
H-A-B-U.
Yeah, and I think the website's like Falcon 37... Falcon37.com. That's what it is. And so this product, the essential gist is it's a charging handle for an AR platform gun and a kind of a cheek rest combined into a single product that's much easier to rack or charge if you prefer. And at first it looked kind of hanky, and also the way we kind of discovered it was interesting. Like, he came up to us and said, hey, when you're done talking to those guys, like, come over here and check this thing out. And so I was like, awkward, you know, but we went over and I was just like, interesting. And then he demoed it and I was like, well, that kind of looks cool. Like, I want to try it. And when he handed me that rifle and I reached up and I pulled back that handle, it was just like, whoa. Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. It's an interesting product because here's what I really liked about it. And folks, I mean, it's hard for us to describe exactly what it looks like. I mean, it's a charging handle, and it would replace your standard charging handle because the charging handle itself, like the aluminum piece, is extended. And it's extended so that there's this kind of cheek riser, cheek rest, whatever piece that has some serrations, we'll call them, on it that snaps onto and screws to that. There's no release button or handle, you know, like a typical charging handle has kind of that little catch, right? And you got to grab that catch and it releases it, and then the charging handle comes back. This one uses a little bit different mechanism, but what I noticed about that I really appreciated is that it makes running the charging handle on an AR feel lighter and easier. And I think it's because, one, you're pulling directly back in line with the charging handle, whereas almost all other charging handles, unless you're using two fingers, which is very difficult to do if you're running an AR very quickly, because almost all other times you're kind of pulling on one side or the other of the charging handle. This one, you're forced to always pull directly in line with the charging handle, and you're using your whole hand instead of your finger or two fingers. Mm-hmm. And so,
go ahead.
Yeah, so I just you're able to run it, and it feels a lot easier and smoother than other charging handles.
Yeah, it requires less fine motor skill, if you want to think of it that way. And it also feels a lot more like racking a slide on a handgun, which I think is what I like so much about it, is it seemed more familiar, more like something I already practice, I already can do, a muscle memory I already had. And so it just, you know, and we just published the video on YouTube this morning of us learning about that product. And so if you're curious, that's one you could go find on our Facebook page or on YouTube.
Yeah. Well, we'll try to put in the show notes of today's episode everything we talk about. If we have those videos published already, we'll put those in the show notes so you can just quickly go and see a lot of these products that we're talking about. That's a really great example, Jacob. I'm glad you brought that one up as far as kind of random product, because you know, it's one of those things where you just don't really see it coming. And then you're like, "Oh, well, this is, you know," maybe at first you're kind of like, I don't know." But then the more you look at it and learn about it and use it, you're like, oh, that's actually really cool. You know, and kudos to you for, I think his name was Steve.
Steve.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, kudos to you, Steve, for, you know, thinking of something like that. You know, good for you. And that's the other cool thing about this industry is you think that that people have thought about everything there's to think about and created it, but far from it. Like every year there's something new and different. And just kind of mind-blowing. And speaking of that, you know, I want to spend a little bit more time on this later and give it a little bit more justice, but just like totally random product that just you just don't see it coming. And that's got to be the Hudson H9 pistol. Because it is so uniquely different and revolutionary in its design and their approach to building it. It's just like, wow, you know, like... How come nobody ever actually thought about that and thought about doing it? And only that, like, you know what? They could have totally taken a very simple approach to that gun, okay? Because what it is it's basically a 1911 style, you know, it's a 1911 style grip. Feels like 1911, although it is a double stack for, you know, intended for 9mm. So, it's 1911 style feel, but it's striker fired. And it's like, well, somebody could have just taken a 1911 platform and just thrown a striker in it, you know, and figured out a way to make that work. But he didn't just do that. He really went to the next level as far as engineering it in ways that, like I said, just totally did not even see it coming. I'm going to spend a little bit more time on that in just a minute, but that was another one of those kind of like, whoa. I heard people talk about it. It did take us a couple of days to finally make it downstairs to where his booth was to see it. And we got there and I'm like, how come we didn't come see this sooner? and it still surprised me. I mean, like everyone's like, you got to go see the Hudson. And then so I kind of had this hype already, and then I went and saw it, and it was even better than what I was hearing from folks. And that's the best thing. It's like one of those, you know, so often you hear about a book or a movie and, you know, someone recommends to you and they kind of hype it up and you go watch it or you read it and you're like, it wasn't that good. This was like way better than the hype. And so I can't even stress enough how awesome it really was.
Yeah. Yeah. Very impressive. And I know you're going to come back to that one.
Yeah. I was just thinking a moment, if there's anything else kind of random that sort of caught us off guard or was really interesting.
A couple things. Like what about some of the products we saw from Real Avid?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we still got to get, I think, a little bit of video content maybe produced on that. But
It should be published today.
Oh, cool. So Real Avid is... You know, I've never heard of their company before until this year, SHOT Show. But it's clear they've been around for a little bit at time. I mean, they've had plenty of time to innovate and create some really cool products. And to me, they are like the MacGyver or Swiss Army knife of, you know, gun cleaning and gun maintenance tools. Just super clever implementation and execution. You know, coming up with like a single tool that allows you to clean every aspect of your AR-15 bolt and bolt carrier group and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, like all in one little tool. And it's not just like, it's like, it doesn't look like this Frankenstein tool that, you know, they just like, hey, we want this tool and this tool and this tool. You know, you could totally make it look like a Swiss Army knife, right? Where it's like this big, massive fat thing with all these tools that just fold off of it. It's not like that at all. It's quite slim. It's quite small and compact in size, very easy to toss in the bag, and everything in its placement as a tool on the tool is well thought out. Mm-hmm. Really clever.
Yeah, they had so many things. Like I remember we got to their booth to look at one very specific product. It was the their Boar Boss, which is a really clever innovation on a standard kind of boar snake. It was just it's genius. And as we're sitting there looking at it, we kind of get done, we do a little video about it, and then we're like, hey, what's that?
You
know? Yeah. And he's like, well, let me show you. And we're like, whoa, cool. Like, it's a pocket knife with all these other tools that make me feel like a gunsmith. And then he's like, well, what's that? It's like, oh, this. And you're like, oh, cool. And they just seem to have tons of that. And I went to their website like that night, and they have tons of products. And it's organized either by the type of firearm, the platform, or by the type of tool you're looking for. A lot of cleaning equipment, a lot of just clever tools and accessories that I was just very impressed by. I thought that they just had tons of good stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't be surprised if we start selling some of their products or sending them to our Guardian Nation members. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you know, and as I said, I hadn't even heard the name Real Avid, but everybody now knows Boar Snake, right? Well, here's a prediction that I have, and I think in a few years, people are going to know more about who Real Avid is and some of the really cool tools that they're designing and developing. So, yeah, and I, you're right, and that don't be surprised if you see some of these things start popping up on our website. Good. That's also another good kind of random product pick, Jacob.
What about the Caldwell
mag charger?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and everybody's always trying to come up with these really cool and clever ways of loading or charging magazines. There's one guy, you know, and we didn't make it down there to see him this year. I've seen him in years past, where you like dump 223 or 5.56 rounds in this hopper and you just turn this crank and it just like loads these rounds magically into your magazines. It's really cool, by the way. I can't remember what it's called. Maybe we'll have to talk about that sometime because I've got that dude's contact info. But this one was kind of similar in that regard. I wish there was a hopper I could just dump my 9mm or whatever rounds in and just turn a crank. And it's not quite to that level, but it's still really, really, really cool because... You know, I'm a big fan of the Maglula Uplula loader. Very, you know, handy tool for helping you load magazines, especially those double stack high capacity ones. But this new Caldwell Mag, I think the product itself is actually called Mag Charger. I could be wrong on that, but I think that's what I seem to recall. The cool thing was that it worked with any magazine. Now, that's one of the cool things about the Maglula Uplula, is you can use it with a single stack mag, you can use a double stack, 9mm, 40, 45, doesn't matter. This one's the same. And their approach just to how that worked was, I thought, really, you know, cleverly thought out, well implemented. But basically, you stick a magazine in, any magazine. You adjust these little shims to make sure that it fits properly, okay, whether it's a double or single stack. And then it's got a friction device, you know, a little clamp. A couple of turns, you tighten that down. So now the magazine is locked in place there. And then it's got a lever and a place where you basically drop a round in and you stick your round in and you compress the lever and it pushes it in and back into your magazine. You know, since that's how magazines load, right? It's got to go in and then slide back. It does all that for you. And it was so easy.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great description of it for someone who can't see a picture. And I Googled it, and it's called the Caldwell Mag Charger Universal Pistol Loader. And I see a couple of websites that have it for sale here, and hopefully we will one day. But yeah, it was just so cool because they kind of had a pile of magazines sitting there, some long, some short, some single stack, some double stack, some 45, some 380, and all of them would go into this thing. And it was just really easy. Like, you know, just kind of drop a little round through this little hole and boop, squeeze, drop, squeeze. Yep. And we did a kind of fun little race with that guy, remember?
Yep, yeah. And he totally smoked us. I mean, it was very clear that he was able to load about twice the speed that we could. Mm-hmm. And
manually.
Yeah. And if you are an individual that suffers from arthritis or any sort of other disability, weakness in the hands, or if loading magazines is just difficult for you, like, this is the device for you because it really makes it so anybody can load a magazine very easily. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, for me, I would just look at it like, oh, I can load my mags like twice as fast now. But for some of you out there, this would be an essential tool.
Yeah, good point.
Yep. Now, how about, let's talk about some companies that impressed. And I'm going to go first on this one. And I think hands down, from our perspective, and I know we're going to start to sound really biased in this regard, but that's Sig Sauer. You know,
oh man,
I've gotten this sense about them in the past, but this year just really drove the point home for me. But whether it's their booth, you know, the cleanliness of the booth and how sharp it looks and well designed, or their employees, you know, the folks there work in the booth, their representatives, really great attitudes, really interested in talking to folks, just a very welcoming place to be and a very happening place. Like, you could tell that because people want to be there and they want to talk to them. It's all like, we never stopped by and not, you know, we never saw 6 hours booth not busy. Like crazy busy, like a little beehive. And Jacob, you like beehives.
And the other thing I'll just add too, like, their marketing was good. Like, I think it's the only booth, and tell me if I'm wrong, dude, but maybe it's not, but it was definitely one of only a few booths that had very specific designated space for media. Like, they have like these little kind of cutouts, you know, in their booth with a nice backdrop with their logo all over it, specifically where they could stand next to a guy like Riley and I, and we could put a camera on and film something. And most of the players just didn't have anything like that. We'd show up and like, yeah, let's do an interview. Great. Like, where do you want to stand? They're like, how about in front of these products? You know? And so it was just, you know, they just were on their game is I think what, you know, in addition to being impressive as far as their product and stuff, their company was just also like on it.
That's a great point. And I'd kind of forgotten that. It was something that I had noticed, and it was a very nice feature. I don't think they are the only. Well, if you'll recall, Leopold kind of had sort of a media platform, if you will. And there was a couple others, but
yeah, Streamlight kind of put us in front of something, but right. it was impressive.
But Sig had a couple of booths just for media, interviews or product demos or whatever. And they were away from the crowd, which as a media person is very appreciative because it was so much easier to get good audio. I mean, if you go and watch some of our videos are just like out in the showroom floor, and it's very hard to get good audio because there's so much buzz and so many people and so much talking going on around you. But Sig Sauer, you know, is very thoughtful, and you can tell that they really want to cater to media by the fact that they built these separate little media areas that are separated. They're walled off so that it really makes it easy as a media person to get what you want. So very well done. And that's why Six Hour was one of the companies that impressed me, besides the fact of the media day that they held prior to the show beginning, separate from the standard NSSF industry day at the range, or media day. Really, really impressive. And we've talked about that a little bit already.
Mm-hmm. And you know, the other funny thing, and I'm hesitant to like talk bad about any company on this podcast, but there were also organizations that did the opposite. Like they just outright didn't seem to care, you know, like, and I'm talking big brands, like brands that every single person listening to this, you know, this, the company name, you know, and we'd show up and they'd be like, yeah, guys, like we got nothing to tell you. Like, oh, we don't want to be on camera. You know, like it was just like, you're kidding me. Right. And there were other companies that, you know, well, there's only one guy here who's allowed to talk to anyone that has a camera, anyone in the media, and he's not here right now. Like, try tomorrow, you know? And you're like, what? Like, don't you want the press? And so anyway, I would also add that, you know, put it in contrast that there were companies that also just outright made it difficult or impossible to be impressed relative to dealing with the media like us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. That did happen a couple of times where we were trying to get with, I don't think we actually, sorry to throw out a specific name, but I don't think we actually ended up doing anything specific with Smith & Wesson. And because every time we kept coming back, their one, you know, media person was not available, was not there, stuff like that. So you know what? And by the way, this is very typical of corporations just in general. Like a corporation, because of the nature of a corporation, because of the size of a corporation, because of, you know, a board of directors, and you know, you know, it's got to be run and operated differently than your small mom and pop shops for sure. But you know what? I understand having that one spokesperson thing. You know, police departments and stuff do the same thing. You know, they have their PIO, you know, that, but you know what? Have two people.
Or let us set an appointment. You know, I mean, we ran into that at like FN, you know, a lot of these corporate, and you don't fault them for that. You're like, okay, I get it. That's fine. But they'll set an appointment like, hey, you know what? If you come at 2:00, we'll be ready for you. And that, it's like that, we totally are understanding of that, right? Like, okay, got it. Like you have some specific people you want to handle this kind of thing. And but you're trying hard to make sure you can accommodate us. That's great. Like I don't have any issue with the corporate organization of the thing, because we ran into that a lot. And that was fine. I had an issue with the, like, you know, Smith & Wesson, you mentioned it, so I'll bring it up. Where they're like, oh yeah, you gotta talk to so-and-so, he's not here. Can we set an appointment? No, not really. You just gotta keep trying back. Like, you're kidding.
Right.
There's just no, they didn't care. There was no organization. And they had some good product, and we like Smith & Wesson. We like their products. We like a lot of the things they do in this industry. So it's nothing, you know, specifically against them, but it was just a frustration for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And their new M2.0, pistol, yeah, I mean, we were going to put that thing on camera and talk about it a little bit there at the show. And it was released, you know, a month or two or three ago now, but we were going to put it on camera, you know, and give them some press, and they didn't make the effort to make that happen. So, you know, it is what it is. Yeah, but we still like Smith & Wesson. And by the way, we still really like Glock. And Glock was the other company that really failed to impress, at least from an exposure and a media standpoint. You know, it's got to be kind of a little bit frustrating to work for a company that goes to a SHOT Show where, you know, you know they're obligated to appear at SHOT Show. You know they're spending a lot of money to be at SHOT Show. They've got to be there. You know, if they give up their booth, someone else is going to take that booth. And a player like Glock or Smith & Wesson can't do that, obviously. And, you know, but they didn't have anything really new to announce or showcase or demonstrate, which is fine. You know, I mean, it's like, okay, you know, Glock lovers love their Glocks and they think they're great just the way they are. I would have thought it would be really cool if they had even just showcased kind of the new FBI pistol, the Glock 17, Glock 17? I'm having brain fart all of a sudden. Glock 17L or whatever, you know, and it's redesigned. Basically, it's still Glock 17, but they've made a few little tweaks. And you know what? They could have totally showcased that. And I know that's FBI pistol, but you know darn well they're going to be selling that in some form.
You don't even have to have new. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
They really rubbed me wrong. And again, like just to reiterate, I like my Glock. I like the company just fine. But you know, you got other stuff you could tell us about. Did you just donate money to a charity somewhere? Are you involved in some nonprofit that you want to tell us about? Did you just, you know, I mean, there's like, if in my mind, like if you have a PR or media person and their response to a member of the media is, got nothing for you, you know, don't bother calling, then they should be fired. Like, find a story.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even if it was just something to like tease us and wet our lips a little bit, like, we've got something really exciting coming. Like, even if they couldn't give us any details, like just to take a moment and pull us aside and be like, we've got something really, really exciting in the works. Then we'd be like, oh, that's cool, you know? And like, that would have satisfied me. But quite literally, it was almost a little bit of a cold shoulder at SHOT Show from Glock, and that was unfortunate. By the way, Glock, if you're listening, I have a little bit of an idea, and here's my big idea. Free of charge, you know, take it, run with it. I think it's about time, Jacob, and maybe Glock has their own little internal reasons against this and whatever, but you know what? Glock would kill it if they developed their own carbine of some sort. They would kill it. You know, like a little, just some sort of like 9mm carbine rifle or something, or even if they did anything along those lines, it would just, the whole marketplace would just blow up. Yeah, and all the Glock fanboys would be like, oh my gosh, you know, because like you see these like these little, what is it, the Rony kits? I think what is it? Are those
there's several, but yeah,
right.
Glock,
you know, like
conversion kits.
People are always looking for that kind of stuff, you know, and they're adding all this stuff to their Glock. Like they're looking for something like that. And it's like, Glock, you're missing out on a huge opportunity here to do something really big. Anyway, so that's just my little Riley's little, you know, hey, you know, here's a hint. Do it, and you'll probably just reap in billions of dollars. So anyway, you don't have to send me anything. Although you could sponsor this podcast if you wanted to.
Hint. Yeah.
I doubt anybody from the Glock's listening because, you know. But anyway, a couple of companies that really impressed, a couple of companies that kind of failed to impress. There was a lot of really great things, though, we saw. But I wanted to kind of turn a little bit now to maybe kind of like some top categories. What do you think, Jacob?
Yep, let's do it.
And actually, I'd like to sort of start from, we have a little bit of a list here. I'm going to start from the bottom, work our way towards the top. So top booth, what was your favorite booth of the whole show?
Ooh, that's a hard one. I mean, we talked about Sig Sauer. I think their booth always looks nice. I like that they had the separate media stuff. Safariland does a really nice job with their footprint as far as kind of highlighting all the different kinds of products that they have and things like that. So that was kind of a highlight. I also really appreciate companies like Leupold, who you can kind of go up on a higher level and they have some of their optics and stuff and scopes and you can kind of look out over the trade show floor. I think that's kind of a nice activation. Last year, Silencer Co., I think really kind of blew my mind. I would have very readily said that was the top booth of the show. But this year, I wasn't as impressed. I just didn't think it was as cool. I don't know, those are some of the ones that stick out with me, but nothing that really blew my mind this year.
Yeah, Silencer Co.'s booth last year definitely, hands down, was top of show as far as booth goes. You know, it was like a little history lesson as you walked through their booth, you know, in 1973, you know, they were going through all the history of the NFA and other gun control laws and acts and things that happened and regulations and, you know, all this stuff. It was really, really, really cool booth. This year definitely didn't quite wow on that level. And it was much more of a standard booth, but it's still very attractive. Still looked really nice, you know, high end. You felt kind of special being there. I did feel like Silencer Co. was making a little bit more of an effort to be open and talk to people, like media, for instance. Last year didn't really quite get that impression, but this year definitely what they were pushing was the Maxim 9. They're you know, in-house built pistol that has an integrated silencer or a suppressor on it, which is really cool. And we saw it last year. It was a little bit, you know, still kind of in development stages. They made a few improvements and changes from then till now. And all, like every window, they had this, you know, behind their main desk or counter, they had this big kind of window display, right? And about every other pane of glass had in front of it a Maxim 9. And it was kind of a cool, nice touch that I thought was really cool.
Yeah.
You mentioned SIG. SIG's booth was pretty much the same as last year's booth. I mean, maybe a few little minor tweaks, but it is a very well done booth. Same with Safariland. Nice booth, well organized, kind of the same, you know, but it's well executed. I'm kind of with you in that I didn't feel like there was any one in particular that it just like, whoa, like that was really, you know, amazing. But those are some good picks. I'm still going through. I'm like thinking Smith & Wesson, you know, it wasn't bad. Ruger's booth was, you know, was decent. Yeah.
A lot of it was just the same. I mean, I just didn't
there was
see,
a lot
know,
of
they,
the same.
They kind of pull out the same thing and like, yep, here we're back. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
There's no harm just, in that.
It doesn't,
yeah.
doesn't shock you. It doesn't, yeah. doesn't make you go, wow.
It is fun though to talk in terms of like, what was the top booth and yeah. Anyway, it was a good show though. A lot of cool stuff. So how about this? What about top accessory? So kind of our any other category.
Yeah, that's hard. I mean, I could talk about my pick of the week, which we saw there. But ultimately, if I had to say like a top accessory, I think that charging handle for the AR platform from Force 37 was the coolest accessory I saw. I think it's the most like broadly applicable. I think it's affordable, and I think it makes a big, you know, significant difference for a lot of shooters. So that would be, you know, I'd call that my number one accessory.
That's good. That's a good pick. And so the Falcon 37 Habu Mod 1, as I think it was called, I would have to go with, those products from Real Avid that we talked about. those were really cool. And I know this is not really new, but it was my first time to really talk to somebody at depth, you know, in depth about it. And Crimson Trace's link system, where you've got the wireless connection between a pistol grip on your AR-15 and a light/laser module mounted to your rail, where there's no wires, there's no having to even work the light out at the rail. It all is very intuitive, right there, built into your grip. I was a little skeptical when I first heard about this a year plus ago, and I did see it at the show last year, but we didn't spend really any time talking to anybody at great length about it. And there's so many things. That's the thing. If you've never been to SHOT Show, you have to understand there are so many amazing things there to see. There is not enough time in the day or in the week to get to it all, and you kind of have to prioritize. So this year, that was a priority for us, was to see the link system and talking to them a little bit more in depth, understanding how it works a little bit better, understanding that it's supposedly, according to their claims, not hackable, that you still have a manual override if something fails in that wireless connection like that. You know, and I obviously could have learned or found out those things if I had just done a little online research. But meeting with their product rep there and going through that, and we got a little video on YouTube about the Crimson Trace link. Really, I think that's a really cool accessory, and I think there's an opportunity there to incorporate additional technology into gun-related products. I know we did an episode, was it like episode number 2, I think, of the podcast, Jacob, yeah. where we kind of really railed on, you know, technology and guns, and not, you know, we're guns are analog technology, and putting all this digital stuff into them is not something I'm really hugely fond of. But I think there are areas and ways to do that where it makes sense. And if executed correctly, with, you know, appropriate safeguards or backup plans in place, definitely can be done. And that's one that I think is pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, another one, if you're going to allow me to talk about something that wasn't necessarily new, was the Mantis X. Last year, they were up kind of in the what they call the next section of SHOT Show, which is kind of for newbies, you know, first year only at SHOT Show, much smaller booths. They don't really get a lot of space to talk to people. And so we saw it last year. We played with it a little bit. But this year, they had a full, you know, full booth. And I went there on Friday and got to play with it more. And they've improved the technology. They've improved the data and the reporting interface. I just continue to be really impressed with Mantis X as a training tool.
Yeah, Mantis X has a competitor coming to kind of to the market, maybe. And I don't know if you want to spill the beans on that one or not, but it was kind of also interesting to see. And I liked the implementation of their product with the app.
Well, I'll tell you, if you'd seen the updates to Mantis X, I think you would be unimpressed immediately with the newbie.
Oh, and I didn't get to see it because you went and saw Mantis X on Friday, and I was already gone by that point.
Yeah, I mean, we saw a couple of things on the new thing, which to call it new or even available is pushing it. But then I went over and saw Mantis X, and I was like, oh, like they've improved there so much that it's night and day. Apparently, I'm not playing with it enough, or I would have known that the improvements were there. But this new player in the market, you know, it's like a theory at this point. It's not in being manufactured. It's not being sold. They don't know what to charge for it. And to me, it's still, you know, is not. I still feel like the Mantis X product is far superior, even after the demo we saw.
Cool. Well, that's really cool to see, and actually is encouraging to know that Mantis X is, you know, because it was one of our favorite products we saw last year. It's one that we sell on our site, and to know that they are, you know, continue to innovate and improve, that's really cool, because you definitely see those companies where they think they have, you know, they developed this really cool innovation, and they already think it's the cat's meow, you know, and it's the greatest thing ever, and it's perfect in every way. And it's very easy to do when you are an inventor, you know, because you spend so much time and pour so much sweat and tears into a product, and you see a problem, and you're trying to fix that problem. You're trying to solve this problem. You're trying to create something that people want and that they're going to use and that they're just going to totally love. And you get to that point, and you think, oh, it's perfect. And you see companies that do that, and they just they're really cool 1 year, and the next year they're left behind in the dust. And so I'm glad you made it over to see Mantis X, and I'm really happy to hear that report from you. So I'm looking forward to, you know, it's about time. We have not yet officially done a in-depth review. Now, we've talked about it, we've used it, played around with it a little bit. I think it's a great product, kind of a no-brainer, so we stuck it in our store. I think it's about time. It's past time that we actually get that full in-depth review accomplished. So stay tuned. We'll try to get that put together here soon.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Now, let's see what else we have on the list. How about, well, Top Shotgun. I'm getting ahead of myself. Top Optic.
Well, I suspect you and I will choose the same one on this one. I was really impressed with the SIG Tango optics, and specifically with the in reticle, what you would call it, leveling thingy.
The level plex.
That thing. Yes. Thank you for helping me not sound too stupid on the podcast. But no, I mean, the way that was described and the way it's used, everyone was talking about it, and I enjoyed the couple of shots I took with the Tango scopes.
Yeah. That's the thing is, last year, the buzz at the show, you know, if you went to 6 Hours booth in particular, they're like, "Hey, we got these new optics. We're getting into the optics game," and you know, I'm always hesitant when I see a major, you know, gun manufacturer, or really just any business that they're known for one thing and they do one thing well, and then they tell you, "Oh, we're now going to get into this other thing," you know, so. Rarely in just about any industry does a business actually truly succeed when they go away from what their strengths are. And so I was a little bit hesitant to go, okay, these 6 Hour optics are, you know, the cat's meow. I already used that phrase. So at the 6 Hour VIP range day is our first opportunity to firsthand play, actually shoot with. I've never actually shot with any of the 6 Hour optics, and I'm kind of embarrassed to admit that. And we were taking shots at 200 yards, 300 yards, 400 yards, and 500 yards. And I'll tell you, I would feel completely confident with the Sig Sauer rifles that that was being used, paired together with their optics to go well beyond 500 yards, and very confident in making those hits. And I am not necessarily a long range shooter by any means, but very, very clear, easy to use, extremely high quality optics coming from Sig Sauer and their Tango line in particular. Their whiskey lines, their hunting line, and I've looked through them. I haven't tried any of the whiskey scopes, but they also look really great. So good pick there, I think, Jacob, as far as top optic. My pick, however, would be the new 7-35 by 56, which is the new scope from Night Force. And although it's pretty easy to be top optic when you cost, you know, dang near $4,000. But
fair,
that is
fair, yeah.
But this is I'm probably going to quote it wrong here, and we'd have to go back and look at the video. I know we did a video interview with them as well, but I want to say that this one has 120 minutes of adjustability in the scope, and that is just insane. I mean, that's mind-blowingly huge adjustability in a scope. So if you're a guy that really needs that and you're shooting really long range, this is the scope for you, the 7-35 by 56 F1 from Night Force.
Well, and I know it wasn't brand new, but what was that awesome, cool optic that we videoed at the Leupold booth?
Oh, that's right. How did I forget that? Yeah,
that was sweet.
Yeah, that was our first time also to really get our hands on the Devo from Leupold.
Devo, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And anybody that's wondering how to spell that, it's actually D-Evo, but they call it the Devo. And that one's difficult to describe. And we did talk about that, yeah. I think. Did we not talk about that a little bit last week?
I don't remember, but we have a video with that one. Yep. It's worth checking out. But the essential gist is you have like optic, traditional like scope reticle combined with red dot in one, with one eye at the same time in the same view, but not the same view. Yeah, too hard to describe. Just go check it out.
Right, right. So that was really cool to see as well. Now, how about shotguns? Now, to be honest, and a disclaimer, now we are concealedcarry.com. We tend to be very much more handgun focused. We didn't even really look at that many rifles necessarily, or shotguns. But for those of you that are fans of Kel-Tec's KSG shotgun, they've kind of taken it to a whole new level. And the cool thing about the KSG is it's a bullpup shotgun with two magazine tubes. So you could, you know, had crazy, you know, when it first came out, everyone was just like, holy cow, I can have, what is it, 12 shotgun shells, 2 3/4 shells in my shotgun in this really small, compact package. And now they've made it, I believe it was a 30-inch barrel. Is that right, Jacob?
I don't remember the length of the barrel. I just remember the capacity.
Well, yeah, right. But it's basically a KSG shotgun, but I want to say either it was a 28 or 30 inch barrel, and still with the two magazine tubes, and it had a capacity of 25 rounds.
Those are full size shells, 41 well, mini shells.
It was 2 3/4, 25 2 3/4 shells.
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I mean, and here's a shotgun.
You got to go watch that video. That thing, I mean, you're just like, what?
A box of shells? It's pump action, of course, like just like the original KSG. But here's the thing that I thought was really cool about that was if you're a guy that just really enjoys, even if it was bird hunting, even if it was doing sporting clays, and they do have a choke kit that I believe you could put on that thing. But here you have a full length, a long barreled shotgun, still in a fairly compact package for considering the length of the barrel in that thing, because it is still a bullpup and you can hold 25, you know, a box of shells in it. I mean, just woo. I can only imagine the kind of fun I'd have with that at a day at a range.
No kidding. It's just impressive.
Yeah. Now, I know because I saw the buzz, I heard the talk. I know there were other really great shotguns. I believe Winchester had a really great release. Benelli, I think, had something really cool shotgun wise. But I'm sorry, we didn't get over to talk to those or talk about them. And some of those are more bird hunting and you know whatnot. So that's kind of not so much our focus. But that Kel-Tec KSG 25, I think, is what they're calling it, or something. Really cool shotgun. Now, how about rifle?
That's a tough one. I mean, for me, like, if you're just asking what I enjoyed the most, it's hard to compare, because we actually got to shoot some rifles, and it's you know, shooting a rifle or a handgun for that matter makes it a lot more enjoyable, or makes it kind of stick in your memory stronger. And so, you know what carbine I'm talking about?
I'm guessing the 6-hour MPX.
Oh yeah.
Right.
That thing is like butter. I loved shooting that gun. It was one of those, like, yes, we'll be buying immediately kind of products. And I just love that gun.
Yeah. Yeah. The SIG MPX that's a joy to shoot. It's a pleasure to shoot. What a fantastic little carbine. So that's a good pick. And I really enjoyed, because it's my first time getting any time behind it, the 6-hour SSG, which I don't believe is a, you know, really, you know, terribly new product by any means, but yeah, unfortunately, like I said earlier, our focus so much is on self-defense, concealed carry, handguns. We don't spend a lot of time going around looking at rifles. Daniel Defense had a great, and I think we did a little interview with them. You know, they had a really great, rifle. Daniel Defense builds really great, AR platform, rifles as well. We didn't really do a whole lot with this one, Jacob, but, this was pretty dang cool. So we got to put this one in this category as well. And that was the FN M249. It was a commercial version. And it's an M249, but not fully automatic. And so for you guys that can't have or get a fully automatic, but you still want that really awesome looking and super high capacity belt fed M249, I saw some guys playing around with those at range day, and that would just be a hoot to have one of those. I honestly, I'd have to say, for me, now that I think about it, just because I think that's really, really cool, is the M249 commercial. I can't remember the exact designation of it, M249S or something. Anyway, that was really fun actually to see from FN. So let's see here. That leaves us getting to top pistol. Now, this is a category that would be a lot more difficult for us to nail down on, because we did look at a lot of pistols. We did talk about a lot of pistols, saw a lot of things we really liked, shot a lot of things we really liked. And I don't know that I can pick just, well, maybe I can pick just one, but there were some other really cool things. Go ahead. What's yours?
Yeah, we did shoot a lot. We saw a lot of things. And again, hard to compare the things that you see and the things that you shoot. I think the Ruger Mark IV was really impressive. The takedown on that thing that they've changed was just like, wow, that's super cool. The new CZ, what is it? The P-something-10C? What was that gun called?
P-10C. And that's CZ's new striker-fired, their first striker-fired pistol ever. Mm-hmm.
Great gun, phenomenal trigger reset. That was definitely a highlight, that reset. But if I had to pick a top pistol, it would be the P320 X series, and specifically the X Carry.
Yeah, I suspected that's what you would pick. Good picks. And I'm going to pick some of the same stuff to a degree, and here's how I'm going to do mine. I'm going to say top new pistol of the show, of the year, I think is a no-brainer. Now, granted, I haven't spent any time with it in my hand shooting it, but just feeling it, looking it over, talking to the designer and the brains behind it, I was really wowed with the Hudson H9. And I'm going to do a little bit more on that. Once again, I've been teasing you this whole episode a little bit about that. That's because it's my pick of the week. So let me come back to that. But that's my number one of the show. Number two would have to be, just in general, the 6-hour X series. You mentioned the X Carry. They really were releasing three pistols. They had the X5, which is the out-of-box, competition-ready, you know, P320 style, you know, design pistol, but with a lot of really nice upgrades and features to it. Out of the box, ready for competition. Just a fantastic gun, a joy to shoot. The X Carry is basically that, just in a, you know, concealed carry friendly form factor. And then also along with that was Kyle Lamb's VTAC version. Once again, a P320, but it was the X. They actually call it the X VTAC, I believe. All really fantastic guns. I'd have to say also in this list, so think of it in this way. So number one is the Hudson H9. Then number two would be like the X series pistols. I'd have to almost say number three is right in there, is also from Sig Sauer, and it is their American version, built here in the US, of the P210, which you just have to shoot one to believe me how incredible the trigger and the feel of that gun. It's got a target style grip on it. It's obviously very much geared towards target shooting, and I'm not much of a target shooter, but I'll tell you, that gun makes me want to be a target shooter, a bullseye shooter. Yeah, and so that I think that's got to be in the list as well. The CZ USA P10C, I think also has to be in the top 10. I think it has the best reset on a striker-fired pistol I've ever seen, without any sort of trigger work or aftermarket or anything like that. The trigger itself, the firing of it was nice. It was good, but it was a reset that's just like, wow, that it made you want to just keep cycling that gun and trying the reset, because it was really, it was so refreshing after, I mean, we've been to Glocks and XDs and XDMs and Smith & Wesson M&Ps and FNs and SIGs, and here CZ decides we're going to get in the striker-fired game, and, you know, as a pistol, as a whole, it's really just kind of a Glock, but with a way better trigger, way better trigger. So
the reset specifically, like you said, it's the reset that makes you do the double take.
Yeah. And then let's see. So that's kind of like four different guns or categories of guns that I'm kind of giving awards to here. And I sort of wanted to have a top five to round it out. And just because I think it's noteworthy, and that would be the Taurus Spectrum. So I'll throw that one out. And that is a little pocket 380 that is a very interesting take on that type of gun. And I think it's going to be really popular. I have the feel that it's going to be quite popular. As long as it's reliable, I think they're going to have no problem selling those things like hotcakes. So it's probably not the gun for me necessarily, but I have to pick it just because I do feel like they're thinking a little bit outside the box as far as their implementation, of the gun, the design of the gun, but also in the fact that it's the first gun that Taurus has completely designed. It was designed by American engineers. It was designed right here in the US. It was manufactured right here in the US. And so I got to give props and kudos to Taurus for that.
Yeah, and it's impressive. Well, that video has already been published. It's one of those things where, like, for me, the jury's still out. Like, I'm impressed, but like, I want to shoot it.
Yeah, and we talked to them about getting one for T&E, and we'll see just how soon we're able to do that, and hopefully give you all a firsthand account of that. Now, by the way, just because before I forget, the FN M249S, I was correct in that it is the S for a semi-automatic version. It can be yours for a whopping $8,499. Buy one today. But it looks so much fun.
Yeah.
All right. So that kind of, I think... Unless there's anything else you wanted to throw in here at the end, Jacob, as far as things from the show, top products, top guns, but I think it kind of wraps it up.
The only other thing I was kind of feeling bad that we didn't talk about a lot were some of the new products we saw from 511. I was just really impressed with 5.11's commitment to the shooter, the industry, and innovation. A lot of complaints that they get is that their kind of clothing line looks very tactical. There's not a lot of covert options. And so they have a new line of jeans, which I know sounds completely ridiculous. But when you learn more about these, and I think our video is already up on YouTube, you know, keep an eye on 5.11 and some of the new stuff that they're doing. I just thought that they were very impressive.
Yeah. They're not the only ones doing this, but the Defender Flex is what they're called, their new jean product. I want to get a pair, and I've kind of strayed away from jeans because I just have decided I don't really like wearing jeans. I don't like that my jeans don't have a lot of options for me as a concealed carrier, but these had a lot of really great, innovative nice touches to them, you know, as far as the pockets, pocket placement. So we'll have, and I believe they said they were going to send us a pair. So, I mean, they took our sizes down. So we'll look forward to getting those, wearing them, trying them, and they might just sway me back to the jean look. That'll be fun to see. And you're right. I mean, that is one that we didn't do any justice. Maybe we should have had another category, top clothing or you know, article or something from SHOT Show. So good for 5.11. 5.11 was doing a lot, I think, to impress. And they had a really nice booth, and they did a really good job. Once again, similar to like SIG. Like, it's one of those places you walk in and you could tell that they were excited to talk to you and took a really good care of us as well.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, there you go. That kind of wraps up our wrap up, but don't leave so soon. We got still a little bit more left in our episode here today. But first, today's episode is brought to you by Guardian Nation. Forget all the other things we are constantly telling you about Guardian Nation. If you need one really easy, no-brainer reason to join Guardian Nation, it would be the quarterly box. Every 3 months, we ship each member a box of tactical gear that is worth at least the minimum cost of 3 months of membership. So all of your membership dues are essentially returned to you each quarter in gear, besides all the other great bonuses that you get for being a member of Guardian Nation. So check it out at www.guardiannation.com. Now, picks of the week, and Jacob, you kind of took mine, I guess. I don't know. There's so many really great things we could have done as picks. So what's your pick this week?
My pick of the week is is Control Eyewear, and specifically their Control One glasses. And several times, you know, while we were recording the podcast today, I thought about bringing these up, like the coolest accessory or other things. But I was like, no, I'm gonna talk about them as my pick of the week, so I'll save it for then. But these things are cool. It was one of those things that you and I both saw in the new product showcase, and we rushed down to their booth. We're like, all right, explain this. Like, what's the deal? And imagine that you put on some glasses that got really impressive ballistic specs as far as, you know, being protective eyewear. They felt comfortable. I just legitimately felt like they're a pleasure to wear. But they have a toggle button that you press to toggle on and off the dark tinting. And it just works. Like, it's like a millisecond. Like, you push the button, boom, it's dark. You push the button, boom, it's light. And you can set it to automatic, so it will detect based on UV light whether or not it should tint and go dark or light or not. The battery is stellar. The really high quality product. It's not a cheesy kind of thing. This is a classy product. They've done a lot in other industries. They made some huge inroads with cycling. In fact, the Tour de France winner or something like that wore their glasses and had some impressive things to say about it. And I was really blown away. And I have a pair sitting right here in my hand, and I love them. They're really cool.
Yeah. I got a pair as well. We were able to get our hands on two of these and be watching for a demo and review. I am so stinking excited about them because it solves one of my big complaints with protective eyewear, in that just imagine I'm outdoors shooting and, you know, 1 minute it's sunny and here we are in Colorado, you know, where they say, you know, don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes and, you know, it'll be something different. And that is so true sometimes, where, you know, it could be just really bright, super sunny 1 second, and then 5 minutes later it's clouded over and the tinted glasses you were wearing while you were shooting, now it's kind of dark and it's harder to see and pick up your sights or whatever. And it's almost like I got to stop what I'm doing, put my one pair, you know, take my one pair off, put the other pair on. If you're one of those guys that has protective eyewear where they have the interchangeable lenses, well, that's a pain in the butt. You know, like I'm going to go from my clear or my ambers now to my smoke or, you know, dark colored ones. Pain in my butt, especially if it's changing conditions. If you're law enforcement and you're in and out, this is where it got me. I'm thinking in my capacity as a law enforcement officer and any other law enforcement officer or military member or anybody that you were used either, you know, just imagine this, you're on patrol or something and it's outdoors, it's during the day, it's bright. So you're wearing your sunglasses, but then suddenly you got to go inside somebody's house and it, you know, it changes like that. Well, you got to take your glasses off with these. No, hit a button and the tint is gone and you can see indoors. And I have shot at a range before where it was partially covered and then not in, you know, like as you worked your way down range, it was a 50-yard range where you could shoot at various distances, and the lighting conditions would change on you. So, I mean, I really got off on a tangent there, Jacob, but it's because I would have probably made that my pick if you hadn't beat me to it.
They're that cool and that worth it. You know, and the other funny thing I was thinking about, I mean, at first, they're not cheap. They're a little bit costly relative to your standard safety eyewear. They're $299. But, you know, the more I was thinking about this, like, it's not hard to find $300 sunglasses, right? I mean, that's a very common, you know, sunglasses can be very expensive. And so as far as, you know, a really nice pair of glasses that have this kind of ballistics and these kinds of features, I think it's appropriately priced.
Yeah. Now, my pick of the week is the, and I already mentioned it, the Hudson H9. It's a 9mm pistol that basically takes a 1911 platform and turns it into a Glock, or it really doesn't look much like a Glock, but it's a striker fired. And Glock, of course, being, you know, kind of the pioneer, really the ones that made it happen in the industry as far as striker fired pistols go. But here's what really impressed me with the Hudson H9. It's not just that it's a platform that would feel very familiar to just about anybody in the industry, especially if you're a 1911 lover, you're just going to love the way this thing feels in your hand. But the other thing is, and as we talked with Cy there, Cy Hudson, the founder, he explained how he's like, we wanted the feel of the 1911, but we wanted the really low bore axis of a Glock that everybody loves, you know, that makes the Glock such a flat shooting platform. So we wanted to make a 1911 and make it really flat shooting. And to make that possible, I don't even understand all the engineering that went into this thing. And they wouldn't let us take it apart at the show and look at the internals that closely. But we did get a glance as there was some images published in Recoil magazine that was able to get their hands on and review and demo this just prior to the show. I'll just tell you, you have four major ways or types of actions in semi-automatic pistols. You've got your blowback, you know, simple blowback action, right? You've got the typical kind of browning camming action, right? Of that is used in a lot of pistols nowadays. You got a 1911 style with the link and how that cams and how that unlocks, you know, the barrel from the slide as it goes back and forth. So that's three. And then a fourth would be like your Beretta style rotating, you know, cam action, right? This thing doesn't look like or use anything like those. It's so different and unique and outside the box. It's not just a rehash of somebody else's design. And actually, Cy said that one of his inspirations was early 1900s, a Webley design from way back when. And that is really cool to see. Something that nobody else has really, you know, thought. Nobody else thought that there was any worth or value in this old design that has now been updated and tweaked and redone for the modern age and has made a pistol that is, by all accounts, extremely flat shooting and really, really, really cool looking. So anyway, I'm talking with Cy and hoping that we get our hands on that very soon. And that's the Hudson H9 9mm pistol. So that's my pick this week. All right, so Jacob, we're into our up next segment. What do you have coming up next on your end?
Well, we're doing a big launch as a company with the Traveler's Guide to the Firearm Laws of 50 States. It's a book we've talked about several times. In fact, it was sponsored on an episode of ours a week or two ago. And we're doing a kind of a big giveaway as a company. We've ordered thousands of these things, and we're essentially allowing people to buy them at a massive, massive discount. And part of that is, you know, a variety of different marketing things designed to help people get exposed to our other products that are available. Things like American Gun Law, which obviously is very applicable for those that are concerned or interested in gun laws. And so there's a lot of work to be done there, and that's what I'm spending a lot of time on right now.
Nice. Good stuff. And then my up next is I've got a ton of new product that I got to review. Frankly, if everything comes that we are expecting to come, we're going to be very busy for a while as far as getting our hands on some of these really great new things and getting them reviewed and getting all that published. So some of that will be in written form, and a lot of it will also have videos to accompany it. So be watching for a lot of great new product reviews coming to you from us here at concealedcarry.com. And so we've kind of, it's been a fairly long episode today. A lot of really cool stuff we, wanted to talk about, and hope you enjoyed it. Please let us know if you enjoy the podcast by leaving us a review of the podcast on Apple's iTunes. If you have access to iTunes, that's the best place to leave a review. And then, of course, you can always send us an email or other message either through our website or through one of our social media platforms such as Facebook. We always really enjoy getting to see some of you or get messages from you. And speaking of seeing some of you, Kenny, who I think we might have even mentioned in one of our last podcast episodes as well, but Kenny, I know you're probably listening, so it was really a pleasure meeting you. He was at SHOT Show, and he hit us up and messaged us through, I think, Twitter, actually. And he actually came by and met us and chatted for a minute. And that was really a pleasure to meet you. So anyway, good stuff. Thanks everybody for your support of the podcast. We are now 10 episodes, really less than 10 episodes away now from our 100th episode. And we got some really exciting stuff in the works and being planned relating to that, as well as some other milestones we're hitting with this podcast, just in terms of overall listenership and downloads and so forth. So stay tuned, because we plan to do some exciting things and give back to you, our listeners, for your support of this podcast. So with that, I'm going to get ready to sign off here. Jacob?
Yeah. Thanks, everyone, for everything you do. And we're going to have some really cool... one other thing I'll just quickly add. We met a lot of awesome people at SHOT Show who are going to be on our podcast. So subscribe, stay tuned, and look forward to some awesome guests.
I'm glad you reminded me of that, because we did make a lot of connections with some people. It's going to be... This last year, I'm so thankful for everything we've been able to do and achieve and accomplish, and 2017 is just going to be even better. So it'll be fun. So without any further, I guess, adieu, although we are going to bid you adieu, so we'll see you all later. Thanks for listening. We'll see you on our regular Monday episode of the podcast. This coming Monday, and I do believe we'll get that one out on time, unlike this episode this week. So thanks for your patience. We'll see you then. Take care. Train hard. Be safe.
A reminder that laws vary from place to place, and we encourage listeners to seek local legal advice to understand applicable laws. USA Firearm Training and the Concealed Carry Podcast strive to share insights and stories about firearm-related incidents and laws, but things could be different where you live, or laws may have changed by the time you listen to this. We cannot be held liable for your actions based on the information shared in the podcast.